This is the Education Gadfly Show.
You know, you're kind of on the tall side. Did you play basketball growing up?
No, softball. Softball player first.
Why didn't you ask if I played basketball?
Come on. I mean, because you and I are in the same category here. Vertically challenged.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the UConn Husky of the Education Reform Movement, Michelle Gininger.
Thanks, Mike. I'm really torn on this one. On one hand, you know, my brother is a huge Duke fan and has never forgotten 1997 when UConn beat Duke. On the other hand, Daniel is a Louisville fan, so anytime UK loses is a good thing. And
interesting.
I think
your loyalties here.
Yes. Mm.
Well, you know, the question is, are you the UConn men's team or the UConn women's team? In both cases, they won the tournament this year, which is pretty impressive. The women's team crushed everybody.
Yeah, I'll go with the women's team. You know, women's basketball needs a little bit of support, absolutely. So we'll go that route.
I mean, the men's team, it looked like was a, you know, obviously big upset. And this is just a year after they had to skip the tournament because of low graduation rates.
Yes, 8%. Only 8% for their athletes graduate, according to the newly launched Vox.com. Ezra Klein, Libby Nelson reported a little yellow card on this. I'm liking the new Vox, getting, you know, making college basketball relevant to my life besides the office pool, which I lost.
This year it was okay. Like, really, you know,
who could predict
this year, right? No, nobody had egg on their face this year in the office pool. I do wonder though, the 8%. I mean, is this because players are going to the NBA, or this is across all of their athletics? They're just doing a terrible job.
I don't know. I mean, how many of these players get into the NBA, whether they leave early or graduate? Most of them end up in Europe?
That's a great question. I don't know.
We should do a research paper on
Arne Duncan ended up in Australia, but after he graduated from Harvard, I assume, right? Did we ever check that? Do we have actually seen Arne Duncan's diploma?
We should.
Another thing to look into. Okay, lots to talk about. Let's do it, Pamela. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Checker has written a provocative piece entitled The Opt-Out Outrage, in which he argues that school testing advances the public interest as much as vaccinations do, and that parents of kids in public school shouldn't be able to opt their children out of state tests. Is he right?
He's outraged. First of all, we got to give credit to Alan Greenblatt at NPR, who was the first one to write about this analogy, the vaccination analogy. And then later on Twitter sort of took it back and was saying, well, it's not exactly the same thing.
Well, I think his problem with his well-researched, thought-out story was reduced to 140 character tweet where we said testing vaccines the same.
Yeah.
So that was mostly his problem, not.
Yeah. And the argument here is, look, you've got all these parents, many of them tend to be either lefty or kind of libertarian, who are opting their kids out of the state tests. And, you know, this is sometimes the same crowd that opts their kids out of vaccinations because of all kinds of fears about what they might do. And the evidence is that, you know, your own kid probably will be okay if they don't get vaccinated. But if enough people do this, it really does put the general public at risk because, you know, vaccinations are one of those public health safeguards. So same thing with testing. You know, okay, you know, ideally we'd have great tests where your own child might gain something from taking the test. Their teacher would get some information that'd be helpful. But even if that's not the case, their participation in that testing gives us information about the performance of the school, which helps all of us know how the schools are doing, make decisions. Enough parents opt their kids out, poof, we don't have that information anymore.
So, I mean, I think that it's really important for all of our kids to take these tests. I just don't understand why a parent who doesn't believe in these things can tell little Johnny when they're going to school, be like, hey, just try hard on this test. You and I know it doesn't matter, but it's just one of those things you have to do in life, because guess what? There are a lot of things in life you have to do, even if they're not fun. They're not perfect, even if we had the greatest tests, but I do think they're important. And what is the big deal? I mean, I hate when these parents claim that it hurts their children's self-esteem and it's too hard and it's blah, 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 blah. I mean, just take the test.
So Michelle's saying, parents, suck it up.
Suck it up. There are a lot of things in life that aren't fun.
That's an important lesson. You do have to learn how to suck it up, right?
Yes.
And I think that's right. Look, I, you know, first of all, there's no doubt in my mind that states should not be allowing parents to opt out, you know, should not have a policy where you are allowed to opt out. I think, look, if you're opting into public education, the taxpayers are paying for your kids' education. This is one of those things that you just have to do. OK, just like you can't just choose to opt them out of other examinations that they take or other policies you might not like, you have to engage with the school. You have to try to change things you don't like. If you don't like the way a certain school exists, I mean, in many parts of the country, you can choose another public school, charter school, magnet school that does it better. This is just one of these areas, though, where we need the information. You know, these parents are being fed this line by the Diane Ravitches of the world that says, oh, this is all feeding the machine. Look, if you don't like the accountability or you don't like teacher evaluations, focus on that. If you don't like the tests, a lot of this backlash is in places like Pennsylvania and New York that aren't moving to the new Common Core tests. Hey, the whole, I mean, one of the big points of this whole Common Core thing is to get to better tests that will address some of these concerns. So, hey, New York parents, rather than complaining about these bad tests, which probably are pretty bad tests, get your state to move to PARC.
But I do think, you know, there were a lot of comments on Checker's post, and one of them that I think was a really good response is the vaccination testing similarity isn't the best one, because there's actually public health. Kids could get sick. Kids could die if too many people opt out of vaccinations. And these vaccinations are very well tested before they are given to adults or children. State testing, it's not the same high stakes. So I will give that it's not the perfect analogy, but I do think suck it up, take the test. If you don't care, tell your kid that the results don't matter to them.
This stuff does matter. I mean, look, these tests are imperfect. We know that. Okay. But we also know that we've made huge progress in this country since we started testing. Particularly the low performing kids are now reading and doing math 2 grade levels ahead of where they were in the 1990s, almost surely because of testing and accountability. That is going to change kids' lives because they're now going to have basic literacy and numeracy they wouldn't otherwise have had. So it is a matter of life and death, Michelle. All right. Topic number two.
The Kansas House and Senate have passed a school finance bill that increases aid to poor school districts and eliminates public school teachers' right to due process hearings. What does this mean?
This means that Kansas is a cool state again. I like it. What do you think, Michelle? Look, I had my doubts there for a while. Well, Kansas was about to dump the Common Core. At one point, they said they were going to have a bill where, you know, where they were going to defund anything related to Common Core standards. I'm like, hello, how are you going to not teach reading? You're not going to teach math? Anyway, they've come to their senses.
No, I think this is a hopefully could be a good path for other states. I mean, you had these crazy ideas like, I mean, Brickman had a great post. You know, are we not going to allow our kids to learn reading or to count to 100? I mean, we need standards. I think everybody agrees we need standards, even the folks who are opposed to Common Core. Granted, they don't have a plan B. But what we got out of this whole process, the bill that actually passed and that the governor signed, was something that, you know, ed reformers should cheer for. We have, you know, we got rid of the crazy hearings after you fire a teacher. I mean, we should be able to fire teachers if they're not performing. That's a good thing. The standards are still there. That's a good thing. So a lot of really good ed reforms exist. So hopefully some of this craziness that is popping up in these state legislatures will not actually make it to the governor's desk.
There we go. Very good. And look, in Kansas, they had lost this lawsuit. You know, we always have mixed feelings about these adequacy and equity lawsuits, but it is pretty clear that during the recession, they certainly cut funding, and it's pretty clear that fell most harshly on the high poverty districts. And that's a problem. And as reformers, we should say, look, as much as we know that money, the relationship between money and outcomes is tenuous, as just basic fairness, it does not make sense to have the poor kids take all the cuts, right? That's just not right. And so this is something that needed to be reversed. Okay, topic number three.
The House Education and the Workforce Committee passed two bipartisan bills on Tuesday, an education research bill and a charter school bill. Are they good news and do they have a shot?
Well, while there's a lot of bipartisan support and, you know, this passed the House, probably the more difficult chamber to get things passed through right now, it's Congress. So, you know, they can probably screw it up.
They could probably screw it up. That's true. And I guess the Senate wants the House to pass their child care bill that they have gotten done with. But look, there's actually movement. It's amazing. They might be able to show that it is still possible to govern in Washington. I mean, the research bill, can we have a more boring topic? I mean, they should be able to get this done, right?
All 400 education researchers in the country cheered together.
I mean, I'm sure, look, there probably is something that could become controversial. I don't know if they get into any FERPA or data privacy issues, for example. But hey, you know, look, Congress has just got to be able to get its job done. And I certainly can appreciate why they can't agree on controversial issues like healthcare. But education research should be doable.
And likewise, hey, that died last session.
I know
session.
It did, which was pathetic. And on charter schools. Look, charter schools have a lot of bipartisan support. This is a good bill. There is a history of doing charter schools separately from the rest of ESEA. That's at least how it started way back in the 90s. And, you know, there's some good reforms in here focused on charter quality, replicating quality charter schools. This would be helpful. Problem is, you got Harkin over there in the Senate. He is not a big charter guy. Iowa is not a big charter state. But, he's about to retire. And so the point is, Mr. Chairman, get something done before you leave. And the door hits you on, on the way out. Okay, that is all the time we've got for right now. Now it is time for everyone's favorite Amber's Research Minute. Welcome back to the show, Amber.
Thank you, Mike.
We were talking about basketball earlier. You're kind of on the tall side. Did you play basketball growing up?
No, softball. Softball player first.
Why didn't you ask if I played basketball, Mike?
Come on. I'm weird because you and I are in the same category here. Vertically challenged.
I was
first base.
Stretch up a little bit. Yeah.
That's awesome. Nice. Hey,
loved it.
Speaking of first base, Nico had his first baseball game in his life the other day.
And did he get a trophy for participating?
He did not. He probably will at the end of the season. Awesome. It's very cute. Kindergarten. They all get to hit and, they just go through the lineup and then that's the end of the inning. But he did like a couple times. He grounded the ball and threw it to the first baseman, but the first baseman was looking at something on the third. Not totally out to lunch.
Don't you love when they run the wrong way? They run to third when they hit it?
No, they totally. Yeah. There was a lot of that. It was a first game. But I did kind of want to say all right, get that first grade, that first baseman. Come on. Get somebody over there who knows what they're doing. Nico knows what he's doing.
All right. Already getting competitive.
I love it.
Okay, let's have some standards here.
We want updates on how the season goes.
This just ain't about having fun.
All right. What you got for us?
New study out by Andrew Biggs called Not So Modest: Pension Benefits for State Government Employees. It examines the generosity of public pension plans. So one thing he doesn't do is tell you which of these states have teachers in their state retirement plans and which don't. So I try to parse that out a little bit for you. He tabulates the benefits that an average full career state government employee, including pension and Social Security benefits, who retired in 2011 or 2012, will receive as compared to benefits received by full-time, full-year employees in his state. Okay, so that's a reasonable comparison there. All right, in the average state, an average full career state government employee has a combined pension Social Security income higher than 72% of full-time employees working in that state. At one end is Maine. Teachers are
employees or retirees?
Full-time employees working in that state.
So these retirees are taking home more money than people still in the workforce.
That's right.
Wow.
At one end is Maine, in which teachers are included, where benefits to full career government employees exceed the earnings of 31% of full-time workers. But that's not so bad, because on the other end is Oregon. Teachers are included in that system. State employees retiring today have benefits exceeding the earnings of 90% of full-time workers in the state. Other states who are generous to their state employees include West Virginia, California, and Nevada. I won't tell you the percentages, but they're pretty high. When looking at total benefits paid out over an employee's retirement, Nevada is most generous. The average full career state employee will receive more than $1.3 million in pension benefits over the course of his retirement. Last, he looks at replacement rates. Do you guys know what that is? So that's not even, that's a percentage of your pre-retirement earnings. So most financial planners say you should get about 70% of your salary, which I thought was kind of high, but whatever. Replacement rate paid to an average full career state employee is 87% of final earnings. Mm-hmm. Pretty generous. The lowest replacement rate is 54% in Mississippi. And three states, this is crazy. Three states pay total retirement benefits between 100 and 110% of earnings. So that's including Social Security. Well, hello. You're earning more, right, than your salary.
Well, and this is the peaks and valleys. This is why we push people out of the classroom, because they say, hey, I'm actually making less than I would if I retired.
Right. So anyway, biggest recommendation, they say calculate benefits on career earnings rather than wages in the last few years, which are naturally going to be pretty high.
Right.
Which is apparently how Social Security does it.
That is how Social Security does it. Did he include health care benefits in there?
No, we did not tackle that one.
So that's not even including health care benefits, which are quite big for many of these employees before Medicare kicks in. Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, it's hard to square, Amber, because you hear these stories. Remember, you know, all the news when Detroit was going through bankruptcy and you heard about these pensioners that were going to lose their pensions. And they were these tiny numbers that you heard, mm-hmm. these, you know, tiny, paltry little, you know, $10,000 a year pensioners that people were losing. I just don't quite get it.
They're not calculated on a full career, you spent your full career, right? They're calculating on like short timers.
Right. So, okay. So this is when
more desperate.
Right. Yes. When you're talking about people who are full career, they are doing quite well.
That's right. That's the comparison group here. And that's the point he makes. Like when we hear these drastic numbers, 9 times out of 10, it's not these full career people.
I mean, how is this politically sustainable in a state when the retirees are at the 90th percentile for income?
Politically, what about fiscally?
Well, absolutely. That's right.
But we don't know, right? Like this is the whole transparency push. Like, do policymakers know these numbers? I mean,
And to be clear, we're not saying that. You have to make a judgment call about what would be appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly true that in teaching, for example, in most of the public service, the salaries tend to be lower, the retirement benefits tend to be higher. That's a bit of a trade off. So keep that in mind. But still, and of course, what's happening now is that, you know, new teachers or new government employees are not going to ever see this kind of generous retirement, right? I mean, this is, and when you put that number, 70% replacement rate, that'd be great. But do any of us Gen Xers or millennials ever think we're going to get to that point?
No, it's pretty high. Yeah, I thought that was pretty generous. But apparently, I need to ask my financial planner about that because it seemed a little high.
We're going to be working until we're 90. Very good. All right, fascinating stuff. Thank you, Amber.
More pension stuff.
Hey, this one, you know how to make pensions exciting, don't you?
Well, Andrew Biggs does anyway, so.
Andrew Biggs. Wasn't there a character from Sex and the City with that name, or was it
that
just...
That was Mr. Big.
Yeah.
Just Mr. Big.
kind of, sort of.
Okay. Stick to sports, culture.
I just wanted to throw that in there. All right, that's all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Michelle Gininger.
And I'm Mike Petrilli. The Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.